The House will come to order. Please stand. Good morning, colleagues. Guests, please stand for the flag salute, which this morning will be led by Representative Sarah Gelzer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. If you would remain standing with me this morning, the opening ceremony will be presented by Kip Jacob, lead pastor from South Lake Church out of West Lynn, and guest this morning of Representative Dave Hunt. Welcome.
Well, good morning. Let's pray together, shall we? Oh God in heaven, on this day when we commemorate and celebrate the presidents of our United States, we remember the words of our first president, George Washington, that government is not reason, it is not eloquence, but it is force for responsible action. God, may you grant these willing and able public servants the wisdom, the courage of responsible action as they submit the powerful force of government to the greater force of thy justice and grace. As we convene on this special day, a holiday for many, including our kids and their schools, we acknowledge our mutual desire to promote the education and the welfare of all of our state's students, families, and their communities. May you guide us in these and all matters of the public good as we seek thy good. In the words of another great president, the great Abraham Lincoln, my concern is not whether God is on our side, but my greater concern is to be on God's side. O God, unite us as we serve side by side, that we would be on your side for thy purposes to be fulfilled this day and each day. In thy name we pray. Amen.
You may be seated. Courtesies. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a pleasure to have my pastor here today. And Pastor Kip Jacob from South Lake Church was actually here and gave the invocation during the regular session. And the good representative from District 55 came up to me afterward and said, you know, Kip Jacob was my pastor about 20 years ago. And when Representative McLean lived in the Portland area. And so what a small world. Here we are now sitting side by side on the floor sharing the same pastor. One other thing I'd remind you about Kip Jacob and Southlake. The church several years ago partnered with Roosevelt High School in North Portland and has built an amazing partnership of solidarity and support for that school and for that community, which has had amazing impacts, not just on improving their football team, but really on improving the vitality and achievement and future of that school. So it's a pleasure to have Kip here with us and appreciate you being down for the invocation today.
Thank you, Representative. And Kip, thank you again for being with us this morning. Colleagues, today I'm going to ask a group of visitors that are over here on the side aisle to step up to the bar, if they would, please. We have with us members of the Committee to Study the Structure and Operations of the Nevada Legislature. They're gathering information on annual sessions and our particular process. So if you would help me and welcome these folks, Assemblyman Tick Segerbloom, who is the chair, Senator Mo Dennis, Assemblyman Jason Frierson, Assemblyman Lynn D. Stewart, and in addition, committee staff accompanying the members are Donald Williams, Carol Stonefield, and additionally, the chief clerk of the Nevada Assembly, whom we will be asking to come and be a guest with us up front to watch the process, Susan Furlong. So please help me welcome them to the Oregon Legislature. Thank you for coming to join with us. Further courtesies, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the side aisle, it's my pleasure to introduce to you two people who are very important to me. And this falls under the core dictum of communication theory that it's not just the message, but the messenger that counts. And I think that that is a law that the organizers of the Day of Action have followed very well. And they have brought down with them to the Capitol my mother and my stepfather, Ann Koppel and Lee Lancaster, who are here for Oregon's Day of Action. And it's my pleasure to welcome them to the Capitol and to be serving under their watchful eye. Please welcome them, colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This morning, I would like to introduce another of my interns who helped make my office run smoothly and well, and also we hope we impart some useful information that can be valuable. Lauren Vermillion is a sophomore at Willamette University across the street, studying environmental policy and Spanish. She tells us that she comes from the state of Washington. In my office, she's been helping, working really hard to help us remain as paperless as we can manage. Please welcome Lauren.
Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's great to be with you today. Today we're joined by Mr. Kane Horman. Many of us got to know, and he's in the South Breezeway here. Many of us got to know Mr. Horman, Kane, because his son went missing in June 2010. I've got to know him over this last year as we've been able to get to visit with each other and articulate ways that we might be able to help missing children. And I've got to know that he's a very articulate man, very principled man, and he's doing everything that he possibly can to not only find his son, but also help others that are missing their children. If you'll extend courtesies to him, he's a wonderful man, and I appreciate him being here today. Thank you, Kane.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome, Kane. Further courtesies, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, behind us here in the gallery is Troop 224, Sherwood's oldest Boy Scout troop dating back to the 1950s, although I think you can tell by looking at the members that they have not been there since the 1950s, with a long-standing tradition of developing local boys into strong leaders, model citizens, and avid outdoorsmen. The troop's charter organization is the Tri-County Gun Club, and the troop has an active membership of approximately 60 boys. The scouts are here today working on the Citizenship in the Nation Merit Badge with Assistant Scoutmaster and Merit Badge Counselor Chris West. Also up there, if he would wave, is Derek Lefebvre, who is an Eagle Scout and will be submitting his application to the Air Force Academy shortly. Please, colleagues, extend them all courtesies today.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome very much. Good to have scouts with us. Colleagues and guests, it is normal protocol that we would not cheer from the stands, so to speak. So if we can, just give a good hearty wave so that everybody knows they're welcome to be with us in the building. Further courtesies, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like you to extend the courtesies today to David and Mrs. Banks on the side aisle here and their lovely children, John 11 and Mackenzie. They're students at Black Butte Elementary School. We all wish we were living in Black Butte, enjoying that beautiful area. They're the guests of Senator Telfer today for a special day at the Capitol, and welcome to your Capitol.
Thank you, Representative. Great to have guests with us, very much. Further courtesies, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming 17 of the 24 women of this year's class of Emerge Oregon, which is a leadership development training program for women. Emerge Oregon was founded in 2008 and since then has graduated three classes of women, successfully training 54 alumna. Of those 54 women, 19 have gone on to be appointed or elected to office or a government board or commission, including two of our colleagues, Representative Hoyle and Representative Kenny Geyer. The class of 2012 is the fourth Emerge Oregon class and is comprised of 24 women from Coos Bay, Lane County, Polk County, Sandy, and throughout the Tri-County area today. 17 are with us today. Welcome to your Capitol, and we all look forward to getting to know you better. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome. Good to have you with us in the Capitol as well. Further courtesies, Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Nick Call be granted the privileges of the House and floor. He is my predecessor and served well. Thank you.
Excuse me, Representative, if you'd hold just a moment. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Oh, never mind, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Wan requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Nick Call be granted privileges of the House and floor. Without objection, it is allowed. Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like you all to send courtesies to the House to my intern for a day, Matt Ferguson. Matt is from Liberty High School, is here today as an intern, receiving credit for his work, and Matt's a student body president, plays football and baseball at Liberty. But more importantly to me, Matt's mom was diagnosed with cancer in 2008. And Matt designed a program to make little Lapros, pink Lapros, I assume.
Bags
with all sorts of comfort things. When I was in chemo, I found that was very important to me. And Matt now distributed hundreds of them, I think, is that right? Thousands of them to people receiving chemotherapy. He'll be off to Northern Arizona University in the fall, and I expect we'll continue his good works. So thank you for welcoming him.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Hoyle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a few introductions today. First, Mary Walston from the 4J School Board is here, along with Laura Illig, shadowing me for the day, local businesswoman. And I have two students from Churchill High School. My son, Aiden Hoyle, you may recognize him from the holiday card, and Yulia Krasnova. Yulia just got back from Russia. She's fluent in both English and Russian. My son is not bilingual, but we did encourage him not to drop his second semester Spanish class. So if you see him, please encourage him that taking Spanish this semester is a good idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. And to the son, listen to mother. Further courtesies, Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to extend my courtesies to a Girl Scout troop who is visiting today, seeing democracy in action. We've got six Girl Scouts over here in the aisle. Please stand up so everyone can say hi. We have Anna Richardson, fourth grade at Laurelhurst School. Hannah Cortain, fourth grade, Laurelhurst School. Lauren Edwards, fourth grade, Laurelhurst. Lauren Handler, fourth grade at Glencoe, and Vita Wright, fourth grade at Glencoe, and finally Jessica Mason, fourth grade at Atkinson Elementary, which is where all three of my children went. Thank you for coming, and also I would like to welcome the two Emerge participants who are shadowing me today, Mary Rita Hurley from North Portland, and C.M. Hall, who is a constituent of mine in Southeast Portland. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome to each of your guests. We have quite a group today. Among further courtesies, today is the birthday of Representative John Huffman. So, Representative Huffman, happy birthday to you. That's the end of the song. Further courtesies, verification of a quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Gilliam is here. All members are present. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate. First readings, memorials, and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports, propositions and motions, first reading of House bills, second reading of House bills.
House Bill 4079, Related to Energy Incentive Programs and Prescribing an Effective Date.
Bill read second time, has passed to third reading. Third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 4027 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4090, relating to urban services and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4090. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill comes to you from your House Committee on Ag and Natural Resources with a 6-1 and one excused. The bill has two parts to it. I'm going to speak about only one part of it and let my colleagues speak about the other part. The question before us, colleagues, is what role do cities have when special districts want to annex into each other's territory? Past practice had been none. The cities didn't have any role. Special districts would work out between themselves whether or not they would take some of the other's territory or not, and it had to be done in what's called a double majority. That system created harmony for the rest of us for many, many years because if one party didn't agree to it, it didn't happen. So if Special District A wanted to annex into Special District B, they had to convince Special District B to say yes. That led to harmony because they would either sweeten the pot enough to get Special District B to say yes, or the deal didn't happen. Recently, one city found an interpretation of the law that might allow cities to begin to play referee between two special districts. It's causing a lot of heartburn in my fire district in particular, but there are other special districts that would be affected by this. That's why the Special Districts Association of Oregon, which has members on both sides of these debates, supports this bill. We're trying to put the genie back in the bottle. Part two is, under situations where there are going to be annexations, what is the most fair way to do that? So this bill changes the process for annexations in the case of a special district and a city to make sure that only the portion of the special district affected by the annexation would be voting and not the entire city on whether just one small portion of the city should be moved from one special district to the other. So for example, in Kaiser, which is a live situation now, or in Junction City, which is holding off apparently pending the outcome of this vote, current law, whether people intended this or not, is Kaiser Fire District or Junction City Rural Fire would be attempting to annex into a neighboring fire district. The city of Kaiser would also end up voting on whether one small part of Kaiser got moved between special districts. The provisions in this bill would make it clear that Kaiser Rural Fire District would be able to vote on whether they want a neighborhood brought into their district, and that neighborhood itself would be able to vote. This is called the double majority. Current law will have it as a combined majority where you'll just add all the votes together and the neighborhood, who's literally the only one affected, could end up being subsumed by the entire majority of the electorate. So in this particular case, there's already an election on the ballot. Some members have asked me about that. I've consulted with the Marion County Clerk. They won't have to redo the election. They will just tabulate the ballots differently to make sure it passes in the fire district that is requesting Clear Lake be moved into their area, and it will have to also pass separately in Clear Lake that they do in fact want to be moved. That's called the double majority. That's the basic fairness involved in that portion of the bill, and I will hand over the other portion of the bill to my colleague.
Thank you, Representative. Co-carrier Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the complexity of our land use system, sometimes things fall through the cracks. One major thing is land that's within the urban growth boundary is unable to be serviced by urban services, particularly water and sewer. I'd like to direct your attention to a handout on your desk that's from me that talks about House Bill 4090. And I'd like you to take a look at some of the photos on that first page, the fourth, fifth, and sixth photos. These have to do with some pieces of land that fit the scenario. The first two are from Bonnie Slope, and the other one is from Park Place, Oregon City. And it shows you kind of these imaginary lines where there not allowed to develop because they can't get services, although clearly services are available. Well, these are political or typically political decisions. They can do this if the receiving city accepts them into their district. But these are the two glaring examples that illustrate our need to bring some relief. So what the bill does is when you have land, and land that's limited to the urban growth boundary inside the Portland metro area, services are unavailable due to geographic or political impediments, the landowner may receive these services from an adjacent district. And they can only receive these if they're within the UGB, the developer pays 100% of the cost, the service provider has planned capacity, and the developer waives the right to object to annexation. If the service provider is a city, they're allowed to collect all the system development charges that they otherwise would and handle permitting and planning to their satisfaction. This allows growth where it's already planned, and it causes governments to cooperate across boundaries for the good of the community. This will also allow property owners to use their land as it was intended. And most importantly, colleagues, this will create hundreds and hundreds of jobs. You've no doubt heard from your mayors. The League of Oregon Cities has been in contact getting mayors to call us during this election year and put pressure on us to oppose this bill using outdated or incorrect information, sometimes exaggerating some of the scenarios under which this bill may be abused. I want to assure you that this bill does not replace planning. Metro and counties have an interest in making sure the comp plans match the goals for growth of city government. And substantial investment has already been made in the proposed developments cited earlier. This bill does not cost the city's money. 100% of the cost of the infrastructure is paid by the developer, and cities are allowed to charge system development charges for supplying these monthly services. The bill does not allow developers to jump the queue, as it pertains only to areas that are not able to be served. There is no queue for these landowners, only dead ends. We are totally committed to some Senate amendments that we'd like to make to address the city of Gresham's concerns. I want to go on the record about that. This is common sense, and these are hundreds of jobs, colleagues. I urge a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to put on record that there was one individual excused during the committee discussion on this bill. That was myself, and I would have been strongly opposed. I would have been the second no. Let me tell you why. First of all, to speak to the base bill, this is a major land use issue, and I believe that it was inadequately examined during the committee process. You've since seen an outpouring of concern from cities, from Metro, and from others about the ramifications of this change. And that was my concern, that we heard the bill one time, then moved it quickly to the floor. I don't believe that the ramifications of what could happen as a result of this bill were adequately examined. Secondly, I think that the amendment to the bill addresses a very complicated and also isolated issue. And it virtually guarantees when we do things in this manner that there will be unintended consequences if we take one issue and change a statute to address that. We need to look at what those consequences will be. It's a complicated and divisive local issue, and I do need that it absolutely must be settled, but not via statutory change. We need to allow those communities to resolve the current question via the planned local election process and not block that process, as well as to allow the current court decisions to take their course. There was a question raised during committee about the intent of existing statute, and certainly that there's a reasonable concern that perhaps that needs to be clarified at some point in time. But we have proved over and over and over again in this chamber that land use decision making is a very complicated process and certainly not one that's well suited to one hearing in a short session. I urge your no vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
This is an issue of some importance in my district. I represent Bonnie Slope, and Bonnie Slope area was Area 93. It got into the urban growth boundary in a way that probably should not have. I argued against it being put in the urban growth boundary at that time. But it is in, and it can't find a way to get served as an urban area. I met with the landowners. I met with Washington and Multnomah County all together to try and find a solution. No solution was forthcoming. I even proposed a bill to move Bonnie Slope into Washington County to help it get served by Washington County Services, which literally comes right to the border of that area, and I was not successful in finding a way to do that. I hate the notion of solving individual land use problems with a statute. It's a stupid way to solve the problem. However, it looks like the only way to solve the problem that I can figure out, and I would urge you join with the sponsors of the bill and vote yes on House Bill 4090A. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Oh, boy. Hey, colleagues, there's a lot of things I like in this
bill. To the bill?
Yes, to the bill. Thank you.
To the bill.
And talk about an issue of timing. If this was last February or next February, I might be having a different discussion right now. But right now is when we're voting on it, and I cannot support it because there's a small section of the bill which directly and is specifically aimed at interfering with an election going on in my hometown. The City Council of Kaiser and the Kaiser Fire District board members, all these people were elected by people in Kaiser. They decided they would put this question to the voters. And within the statute that exists right now, that's what they're operating under. I understand there might be a change in how the vote might be tabulated. What's this? We're going to start with one set of rules and end up with a different set of the rules by the time this... I mean, the election's literally in process right now. Ballots have been sent out to overseas voters, and they're going out to the rest of the constituents this week. So, and the Oregon Constitution prohibits the legislature from passing laws on matters of a purely local concern. And in my opinion, there are parts of this bill that are striking at matters of a purely local concern. The election and the debate that has gone on in the recent weeks about this bill has raised, I believe, many valid issues about annexation laws as they stand, and I do believe we need to have a thoughtful discussion about those issues. Well, let's do it during the interim. Let's not be rushing something through this quickly, striking at one specific city in this lightning-fast February session. You know, let's look at it a little differently. Would we be specifically calling our... Is what's happening now so egregious that we would specifically be calling ourselves into a special session to deal with it? To insert ourselves into a local matter? I don't think that we would. So why would we use this conveniently timed, or whatever word you want to use there, session to do just that? I don't think that we should be swooping in as a state and stopping or changing the rules on an election, a local election that's literally in process. That could go either way, whether you agree with the question on the ballot or disagree with it. And I have friends on both sides. Let's leave it up to the ballot box. Let's leave it up to the courts. There's literally something in the courts about this right now, too. That's where, if there's disagreement about how a law is being upheld or being applied, that's what the courts do. They make decisions on this every day. I just don't think that's what we should be about here. And I think the Statesman Journal last week summed it up pretty well in an editorial on this particular election. They said, instead of monkeying with an election already in process, the legislature in 2013 should determine how to resolve boundary disputes among fire districts and other local governments. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, last week you received a letter from most of the mayors in the Portland metropolitan area, and I just want to go through and say a couple of things of what they were trying to get through in their letter. This was a letter from Mayor Lou Ogden from the city of Tualatin. And I think it boils down to one thing, and that's the idea of local control. We talk a lot about local control in this chamber, and this is something that is actually taking that local control away. And to quote the letter that Mayor Ogden sent, he said, specifically, House Bill 4090 would effectively create a new problem area for in residential development with inadequate services, exactly the kinds of areas that local elected officials have been historically challenged to solve. Since the bill allows landowners to demand services as soon as they are brought into the UGB, it fails to take into account the time it takes for the important urban service agreements to be developed after the land is brought into the boundary. And any of you that have served on planning commissions, and many of us have, realize what kind of a problem that is. But I think more importantly, this letter was written by Mayor Ogden, but also includes the mayors of Portland, Gresham, Cornelius, Happy Valley, Tigard, Beaverton, Lake Oswego, Wilsonville, Westland, Sherwood, Oregon City, Tualatin, Durham, King City, Wood Village, Forest Grove, Fairview, and Hillsborough. I urge a no vote on 4090. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to House Bill 4090 as well. I do agree that we have some issues with being able to develop land within our UGB, and that is a problem that this body needs to address. But to address it in such a way that creates inequities amongst the taxpayers inside those UGBs and inside the city limits, where some will be paying a different proportion of taxes for providing services than others, just is not an equitable way to solve this problem. We need to look at annexation and how it fits into our land use goals, and we need to figure out a way to remove the impediments to cities from annexing and providing services in a smart way that provides for planning for the future, that provides for developing those lands inside the UGB, and provides for doing it in an equitable way so that all the taxpayers within that UGB are paying the same for the services provided. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Klim, would you like to close? He would.
Briefly, Mr. Speaker, I woke up the other night and realized that much to my poor colleagues, my co-carrier's chagrin, I attached an appendage to this bill. And it reminded me of the story of Frankenstein, where I've cobbled together a creature that has now made it into the February session, wandered out onto the House floor. Some villagers, there's this hue and cry about the evils that this poor creature would commence upon their populations. The reality is, one part of the bill says that if you are stuck in a very tight spot where you're in a UGB and no one wants to serve you, and you're willing to pay the full cost of being served, someone will finally help you. The other part of the bill says if you're about to be annexed against your will, you'll get to vote. And if you and your neighbors vote no, you don't get moved. That's this bill, this poor, poor, misunderstood creature. I urge you to please give him a path to the Senate.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
I'm going to be 31 if that's all he's got. All right, no problem.
Sorry to go down with Freeman.
Representative Hicks, how do you vote? Hicks votes aye. Representative Hoyle, how do you vote? Hoyle votes no. Representative Parrish, how do you vote? Parrish votes aye. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes no. House Bill 4090, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4171, relating to election filing deadlines and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4171. Representative Esquivel.
Let's see how it goes.
Thank you, Mr.
Speaker. Could you pause for just a moment, Representative? Colleagues, I know we got a little bit of a change upstairs and around, but we'd really appreciate your attention and as much quiet as possible. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, colleagues. This bill is a fix-it bill, nothing more than a housekeeping bill. After candidates for elective office are chosen by political parties, the parties inform the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State, in turn, is required to notify Oregon County clerks by a particular deadline. With regard to the upcoming election in November 2012, both major political parties naming conventions where they choose an in-state electoral candidate or candidates for president and vice president are scheduled to occur after the Secretary of State's filing deadline. House Bill 4171 adjusts the deadline so the Secretary of State can comply. Simple bill, should pass.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Parrish, how do you vote? Parrish votes aye. House Bill 4171, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent. The consideration of HCR 205 be a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, February 21st, 2012 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 201, recognizing and honoring Eugene Police Officer Chris Kilcullen for his service to this state.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 201. Representative Hoyle.
Thank you. Chris Kilcullen was born and raised in Eugene. He graduated from Willamette High School in Bethel, then went to the University of Oregon. In 1998, he joined the Eugene Police Department. In his 12-year career, he earned more than 85 commendations, was crucial to creating the department's crisis intervention team, and served on the department's crisis negotiation team. Officer Kilcullen was killed in the line of duty April 22nd. On December 10th, our community honored him by dedicating a stretch of highway that he most frequently patrolled. The stretch of highway where he lost his life. We dedicated the Officer Kilcullen Memorial Highway in his memory. I pass that sign on most days, and it serves as a constant reminder of what our community lost, of what his family will never get back, and highlights the great sacrifice of those who dedicate their lives to protecting and serving us. Springfield Police Chief Jerry Smith had said, There's no greater love than to lay down one's life for his friends. And everybody in the community was Chris's friends because that's the kind of person that he was. He won't be forgotten every time we drive that stretch between Eugene and Springfield. Chris will be there, said his father. He's survived by his wife, Christy, his daughter, Katie Ann, and his stepdaughter, Sydney. I spoke with his wife last month, and she talked about how passionate he was of helping those who are less fortunate and how passionate he was in working with people who suffered from mental illness. He was shot and killed by a woman who suffered from severe mental illness and could not, and was not able to get adequate treatment for acute, severe schizophrenia. This is wrong. And she said to me, his wife said to me, we need to do something to make sure that we get appropriate and adequate treatment. And if that's one thing that we can do that his death causes, then that will be really important. Today, what I'm asking you to do is to pass Senate Concurrent Resolution 201. It recognizes his service to the people and the state of Oregon, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Senate Concurrent Resolution 201, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 203, commemorating the Jubilee Year of Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon and their 125 years of dedicated ministry and service.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 203. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, SCR 203 comes to you from the Rules Committee, where it passed on a 9-0 vote. The resolution commemorates the Jubilee Year of the Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon. The Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon was founded in sublimity in 1886 and has provided 125 years of uninterrupted dedicated ministry and service. Their convent is in Beaverton. Their mission includes serving the needy, founding educational ministries, and caring for the elderly and disabled. They are selfless women of prayer living in simplicity and sisterly love who have been turning faith into action for countless others and without fanfare for well more than a century. Their 125th year comes to a close on March 25th, 2012. This resolution has no fiscal or revenue impact. It is a good bill and deserves your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does.
Thank you briefly, Mr. Speaker. I want to close with a quote from Shakespeare from Henry VI that I think is appropriate. I thank them for their tender, loving care. Good bill. It deserves your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett is aye. SCR 203, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 204, commemorating centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 204. Representative Berger.
Thank you, colleagues. SCR 204, which
I think enjoys broad support is in celebration of the 100 years since Oregon became one of the first states where women could vote. It's been 100 years, and we can even sort of make jokes about this in some level. When the blue light went off in the Rules Committee after we had heard and approved this particular resolution, some wag said, should we slap a sunset on it? It's good to make jokes. That particular representative is unmarried and probably will remain unmarried with that kind of an attitude. But I'm not going to impugn anybody. We're here in celebration of the fact that after 100 years, it's sort of a no-brainer. But I can tell you that if you read your SMS, it wasn't a no-brainer. This effort started in Oregon in 1872. It was put to the voters two times by the legislature. There were five statewide ballots to get this done. It took a huge push by a lot of people, and Oregon can be darn proud that we were one of the first in what today seems like sort of a no-brainer thing. Well, of course women should vote. Of course all citizens would vote, because that's all that we changed our Constitution to, from white male citizens having the franchise to citizens having the franchise. And I think words matter, and I think it's a good day to remember how words and process matter, and celebrate 100 years of something that seems obvious. What begs the question, and I wish you would contemplate a bit, is what are we missing now that 100 years from now will seem like an absolute no-brainer? Please join the women of the state and the men of the state in celebration of our centennial of women's suffrage. It's worth celebrating and recognizing, and I know there are a number of events throughout the state. Please participate with us. Thank you, and I approve adoption of this resolution.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, it's indeed appropriate that we celebrate this centennial today, but I want you to look around and see the proportion of women in these seats. And I want to ask yourself, have we achieved equal rights here? And I hope we don't wait another 100 years to put equal number of women and people of minorities in these seats that you and I share. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kinnamer, how do you vote? Kinnamer votes aye. Representative Klim, how do you vote? Klim votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. SCR 204, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Representative Harker, for what purpose are you in the queue?
I don't believe I am in the queue.
I don't believe I am in the queue, Mr. Speaker. Inadvertent. Sorry.
We thought you had a special announcement. Thank you very much. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1504 relating to health insurance and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1507 relating to HIV testing and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1510 relating to ocean resources and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1531 relating to connection to federal tax law and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1532 relating to exemption of property in enterprise zones and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1537 relating to abandoned burial spaces and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1565 relating to dispensing of drugs and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1505 relating to civil commitment of Native Americans and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1505. Representative Wand.
Senate Bill 1505 comes to you from a unanimous vote from your House Judiciary Committee. I really can't introduce the bill any better than the one page we received from the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation, so I'll just read that into the record. It would update the current statutes with a process by which reservation Indians can be committed to an off-reservation local hospital or other appropriate facility on an emergency basis in a manner that reflects current state commitment processes consistent with federal law limiting state civil jurisdiction in Indian country. This will generally result in commitment of Warm Springs members to St. Charles Medical Center in Bend, close to home and family. The bill does not shift the cost of transport and commitment, which will continue to be borne by the tribes. It's a good bill, should pass. Urge your vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wan, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelzer, how do you vote? Gelzer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 1505, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1524, relating to private security professionals and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1524. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a bill that clarifies language for legislation that we passed last year relating to what personnel at bars serving liquor under the control of the OLCC should go through formal training with the DPSST. There was no opposition in committee. It just clarifies language. I'm aware of no opposition from cities or counties or law enforcement. I encourage your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Conger?
Aye.
Conger votes aye. Representative Girard? How do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 1524, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1525, relating to public safety and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1525. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. Senate Bill 1525 comes to you from the House Committee on Judiciary, where it passed with unanimous support. The bill passed on the Senate side with a 30-0 vote. Senate Bill 1525A makes two technical changes to Department of Public Safety standards and training statutes, one relating to the relationship with tribal law enforcement agencies, and one relating to a position on the board on public safety standards and training. Essentially, it deals with certification for tribal members if they choose to be part of what we passed with Senate Bill 412 last year. And then it also includes and directs that a member from the special, actually the FBI agents in charge, would be part of the board. I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 1525, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 1529, relating to property taxation and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1529. Representative Widener.
Widener? I think that's me, Mr. Chair.
Pardon me. Representative Brewer.
I see the resemblance. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this is a very thrilling bill coming to you out of your Revenue Committee. It has to do with property taxes and has come forward as a work product of both industrial and commercial landowners, business and management companies, and county assessors. What this does is, under current law, real property, machinery, and equipment is lumped together with real property, land, and improvements. This bill separates out the real property, machinery, and equipment into its own classification. It also adds onto a collection process for real property, machinery, and equipment. Currently, if there's delinquent taxes, it can only be collected through the foreclosure process. What this bill allows is for the county assessors to actually take advantage of going through the warrant process as well. And essentially, that is what this bill does. I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, would you like to close?
Just one statement. Just for the record, I would like to bear into the record that I want to ensure that there is no broadening of the application of real property, machinery, and equipment on a go-forward basis as the current practice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes aye. Speaker Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Senate Bill 1529, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 1529 be taken from today's calendar, placed in its proper place on Tuesday, February. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 1575 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Tuesday, February 21st, 2012 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It has been posted. The House Health Care Committee is canceled for today. See you Wednesday.
Further announcements. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's me. I move that the rules be suspended and that Representative Parrish be allowed to change her vote on House Bill 4090. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Kotek moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Parrish be allowed to change her vote on House Bill 4090. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Parrish, how do you vote?
No.
Parrish votes no. Further announcements? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a brief announcement. Today's a great day. My family's actually in the building. My daughters are here. They're going to be in my office. And please stop by the office and contribute to the Girl Scouts of America. You'll find out why if you get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Remonstrances? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, we request permission to temporarily return to the order of courtesies. I want to get...
Thank you, Representative. For your courtesy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and my predecessor, former Representative Suzanne Bonamici, current U.S. Congresswoman, be granted privileges of the House and floor.
Representative Harker requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Suzanne Bonamici be granted privileges of the House and floor. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. Welcome, Representative. Remonstrances? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we're now approaching the deadline for the Health Care Transformation Bill, Senate Bill 1580, to receive what is customarily a routine ceremonial signature to signal receipt of a bill and send it to Ways and Means before it comes back to the floor. In this instance, it's been 5 days since the bill was first read after passing in the Senate. Still no word on the health care exchange either. It sounds like full speed ahead there. It sounded like full speed ahead there for a while. Every major business group is in support. There's broad agreement that there would be savings for businesses, the self-employed, not to mention a unanimous vote out of committee. It looks, it kind of seemed like a glide path to a bipartisan victory, and a victory for Oregon's economy and for those who are still seeking work, for which we could all join together and share the credit. We could tell Oregonians we took serious steps to bring down costs and improve access. Instead, here we are, more than a week later, and we haven't heard anything. The end of the session will be here before we know it. It's now day 20 of what we were told would be a 29-day session. Colleagues, Oregonians told us to come into annual session because they knew, they know we've got a lot of serious business to get done. Let us show them that we're up to it. Let us show them that we can make good use of this session to pass the good bills that will help Oregon's businesses, workers, and our constituents statewide. Colleagues, this is a jobs bill. Oregon needs health insurance costs to be at the level that we can afford, and we need our health care system to be as efficient and as effective as possible. These two bills move that measurably forward. 100 years from now, this will be a complete no-brainer. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrance? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last Friday, the Oregonian had an article on the editorial page pointing out some good work that Mercy Corps Northwest and the Rose Community Development Corporation are doing in Southeast Portland. Specifically, Lentz, which is a large part of my district, has I have a lot of large part of Lentz neighborhood in my district. 20,000 folks live in this neighborhood. 40% of the households rent, and 25% spend more than half their income on rent with nothing to fall back on. This is great work. I'm grateful for this. I know my district. I know the folks. They really don't want subsidized housing. Many of them do face challenges, and we're always going to help them with our safety net. That's great. The safety net we have to pay for. But folks that want to go to work, need a job. My friend just from Eugene talked about the health care. Great. We have to pay for that. And, you know, we're 20 days in, and I'm sorry, but I haven't seen any major job creation bills pass this floor, and I know I didn't miss any. So we need to cut some timber and develop some water. And now that we have our newest congresswoman here, I can ask her, beg her to join Congressman Walden and DeFazio and Schrader and get us back onto our federal land so we can log sustainably, responsibly, and put the jobs out there so we can pay for this safety net. That's the challenge we face. The federal government is not going to be there forever with all this money. She's facing huge problems with $16 trillion in debt. We have to learn to take care of ourselves in Oregon. We can. We have an army of people that know how, safely, responsibly, sustainably. And we're not doing our job here in passing job creation bills, which need to go first, then do all the wonderful safety net because we'll be able to pay for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's President's Day, and as always during the session, we are here while others, including school children, have a day off. Rallies for public schools have taken place on the front steps of the Capitol on President's Day as long as I've been paying attention. And as it has been for the past 20 years, inside the Capitol, the debate rages over yet another set of demands for educators. Yes, education is one of the few things that everybody thinks he or she is an expert on. If it were only run more like a, you fill in the blank there. The latest buzzword is outcomes. The system is supposed to focus on outcomes. Okay, sounds good. But I've asked more than a few times, what is an outcome? Is it higher scores? Is it something called achievement? Now, I'm all for making sure that youth are not wasting their time in school. I'm all for high expectations and doing what it takes to meet them. And I'm even for demonstrating that it has been learned. I'm just not sure that we as decision makers would recognize achievement if it slapped us in the face. Because as much as we'd like to avoid thinking about this, you cannot have outcomes without inputs. While we've been talking about achievement and expectations and school choice and shaking up our governance systems and demanding that more and more time and resources be spent on standardized testing regimens, we've stripped down the opportunities available in our schools. I'm going to give you one small example. Study after study has confirmed that in the wondrous thing that is the developing human brain, involvement in music seems to have a beneficial effect on learning math. And despite this, we have largely removed music from many of our neighborhood schools, as if it were a frill, a luxury. Of course, families with the wherewithal to provide enrichment outside of school will always make this available to their kids. And then we wring our hands about the so-called achievement gap, as if it is all a mystery, or maybe the math teacher's fault, or maybe those at-risk kids just can't do math, whatever. The outcome that really matters is a couple of decades away, when the elementary students of today are the young professionals, inventors, entrepreneurs, artists, and tradespeople, the young parents of tomorrow. I don't think the test vendors of today have the capacity to define that outcome, and yet that is exactly the risk that we are taking. Now, you can't grow crops without good soil and or fertilizer, without water and sunlight, and not all crops grow the same way. And you can't grow educated citizens without the inputs of rich, stimulating, interesting, supportive learning environments. Until we're ready to not only have that discussion, but to step up and invest on the input side, we are the underachievers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to thank you for your words of encouragement and your tolerance for my absence as my family deals with some difficult challenges. This past week has been a cause for considerable reflection, and it spurred me to share another reflection with you. Recently, my community held a memorial to celebrate the life of a Newport veterinarian, Steve Brown, who lost his battle with cancer at age 62. While most of you likely did not know Steve, you might remember him as Keiko's vet. During his exemplary career, he also tended a wide array of other critters at the Oregon Coast Aquarium, as well as pets in my home and those in many, many other homes and farms. Today, I ask this body to honor an individual who just last year was awarded the Oregon Veterinary Medicine Association's highest honor, their Meritorious Service Award. This award recognizes not only service within the profession, but also within the community. and Dr. Brown's leadership clearly extended into my community, where he and his wife Marion have been dedicated volunteers since opening their Newport practice in 1976. On a personal level, my husband and I had the opportunity to explore the Eagle Cap Wilderness with Steve via the back of a mule. And the memories that we made on that adventure are ones that I hold dear forever. Steve believed, and these are his own words, that a person needs to be a supportive and contributing part of the community where they live. He demonstrated that commitment on a daily basis. An article about Dr. Brown in the News Times, our local newspaper, summed up his legacy with a poem called The Lamplighter, penned more than 20 years ago by an anonymous author. He has lifted his bright candle and has gone into another room I cannot find, but everyone can see where he has been by all the little lights he left behind. Colleagues, I hope that all of us will continue to share Dr. Steve Brown's spirit of dedication to community service as we continue our work in this body.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's odd for me to speak twice in one day, but here it goes. Thank goodness for second chances, colleagues. This session we had four good foreclosure bills in this chamber that would have made market impacts on the ability of middle-class families to stay in their homes in the face of the most brutal housing crisis in recent memory. Foreclosure is tearing lives apart, and there is no sign of letting up. Just last month, over 400 homes were taken by the banks in the state of Oregon, and this problem will not resolve itself. I circulated a floor letter this morning with a copy of the editorial from Sunday's Oregonian, and it raised the good question, colleagues, why not help people keep their homes? The Senate took action on the package of foreclosure reforms. They passed a package that had bipartisan sponsors and overwhelming bipartisan support. They sent it to us last week, but I think it's important to note that they didn't start last week. It was far from it. The package before us for consideration are concepts we've been debating since last session and were further developed and considered by this committee this fall. As this weekend's editorial said, the dual track and pre-foreclosure bills would give homeowners a chance and a venue to make a case for keeping their homes. This is one of the most important things that we can do this session. We must pass packages to make sure banks can't act as if they're negotiating on one hand while instigating foreclosures on the other. Why not help people keep their homes? Let's move swiftly, colleagues, and pass this package of bills in their current form. It is truly one of the most important actions we can take this session. Let's not allow any more homes to be closed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, a personal plea, not for myself, but for many of my constituents. I'm asking each of you to help me find a way out of the woods for the citizens of Vernonia. A timber community in a timber town in the Coast Range in my district. I think most of you know that this community suffered two 500-year floods in an 11-year span. And this is a town that has lost so much. First, with a downturn of our state's timber economy, it really has lost its economic base. And then so much of the physical infrastructure swept away by two floods. All that is left in that town is a willingness, a will rather, for that town to survive. As part of that town's recovery, all of the schools have to be replaced. In fact, one has already been raised. Elementary, junior, and senior high schools. And to date, to replace three buildings with one, to economize to the greatest extent possible, the community has raised $33 million. They've done so by applying for grants, by fundraisers, and by raising their tax rate by $1.80, again, in a town without much of an economic basis. But in the 2 years since site preparation began, a lot of costs have risen, not the least of which are energy-intensive building materials, specifically things like asphalt and concrete. And the town now finds itself $6 million in the red in terms of being able to complete its school building. And I'm asking you here today to help this community find a way to open its school in September. The elementary school children need a warm, dry place to have their school.
Thank you, Representative. You've exceeded your time limit this morning, and there is no extension.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Adjournment, Representative Jensen, 11 a.m., Tuesday, February 21st, 2012.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 11 a.m., Tuesday, February 21st, 2012.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 11 a.m., Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.